Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Stephen Walter, Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University. He is the author of The Origins of Alliances, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy, and The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. His recent article at Foreign Policy is Five Potential Game Changers in International Diplomacy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Stephen Walt.
Nice to be with you.
And let's start with Europe. We were going to talk about that. And clearly, you've written also in Foreign Policy recently about kicking the euro down the road. My understanding is that this non-solution to this problem will result in the markets coming back sometime in January and to pound the euro again. Do you expect that to happen?
Yes, I'm afraid I do, and I'm not sure it'll take until January, because what European leaders were able to do last week is not something that's really going to solve the more fundamental problem. The central problem with Europe now is sort of a combination of a balance of payments problem between the southern zone countries like Italy and Greece, and of course a set of debts that they owe, which are of course held by banks throughout Europe and possibly elsewhere. And no one fully knows exactly how vulnerable those banks really are, because there may be sort of complicated derivatives and other financial instruments that would compound any kind of a run that would happen. The central problem, of course, is that that in order for the various countries in the south, like Italy, to sort of keep the banks happy, they have to be able to credibly promise to pay their various debts. And in order to pay their debts, they're going to have to grow economically. And what this deal is doing, of course, is enforcing greater austerity on these countries, which of course will choke economic growth. So eventually the markets will wake up to the fact that Italy, Greece, others are not likely to pay back the money, at which point they will start charging more interest for these countries to borrow more, and we'll be right back where we were, you know, a few weeks ago.
So, Stephen Walt, is there a better explanation for this 18 months of dithering? It's been suggested to me by some economists that there are elements in Germany and in the kind of elite amongst the European powers that would like to break the social democracy compacts, the social safety net, of course, which is infinitely greater than anything we have here in the United States, in order to make Europe more competitive with, say, Sri Lanka, which, of course, is the whole mantra of globalism, one that, of course, has resulted in the United States eviscerating its own industrial base. Do you think there is something else at play here?
Well, there are, in any society, there may be people who have an agenda like that. I don't think that's what's been driving this particular crisis. And if that's their objective, it will backfire horribly, because the only way you would do that is not just to dismantle the safety net, but you would ultimately have to put more and more people out of work, which is going to generate an enormous amount of social dislocation, probably strengthen not just, you know, free market right-wing parties, but more extreme right-wing parties, and you could really see a nightmare scenario down the road. I think this is much more of a sort of a classic case of people who may understand, you know, sort of what the long-term problem is, but can't see their way clear to solving it in the short term, because they understand that that would be painful. So what you've seen, I think, now for at least 18 months, maybe longer, is a set of half measures, people doing just enough to, you know, calm things for a while, even though they suspect things may get worse overall. There is, I think, you know, sort of one scenario here where this works out, and basically that at some point the Germans, who have been driving most of the responses, are satisfied that they have imposed enough discipline on the recalcitrant countries in the south, and at that point they will quietly signal to the European Central Bank that they should really intervene more readily to safeguard these various debts. You know, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, will at that point be able to go to her people and say, look, we've imposed enough order, we're going to get those Greeks to act a little bit more like Germans, and this will be politically saleable. That might work, but it's not at all clear that the European Central Bank will ultimately do that, which again would put us in essentially back in the same soup that we've been in several times in the past 2 months, with a lot of vulnerable economies and a lot of economic uncertainty.
And
I wish I had more good news to share.
Well, let me remind the audience again, I'm speaking with Dr. Stephen Walt, Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University. He's the author of The Origins of Alliances, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy, and The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. He has a recent article in Foreign Policy, 5 Potential Game Changers in International Diplomacy, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But let me just finish up, if we can, on Europe. This clearly, if the Europeans don't get their act together and the euro crashes, and it could be soon, as you mentioned in the beginning, that will have a terrible impact on the global economy, on the U.S. economy, and which is not in great shape. And surely that will have political consequences.
I think there's no question about that. And I've said, as I've heard a number of other people say, that ironically, perhaps the one individual in the world who has the most effect on the 2012 U.S. presidential election is Chancellor Angela Merkel in Germany. That if she is able to sort of get the Germans to commit to do more to try and keep the Eurozone afloat, then, you know, the U.S. economy is likely to continue to slowly improve, and that would obviously improve President Obama's chances for re-election. If, on the other hand, you get a real meltdown in Europe at some point in the next year, this will have negative consequences for the United States. We don't know how severe, but they'll certainly be noticeable. And economic troubles here at home in a presidential election year is usually not very good for the incumbent. So in a funny way, you know, Obama's fate may be very much in Angela Merkel's hands.
So turning to your article now at Foreign Policy, 5 Potential Game Changers in International Diplomacy, Stephen Walt, you know, the examples that are out there to give the audience an idea of what we're talking about here are Nixon's opening to China, Sadat's visit to Jerusalem. On the negative side, Molotov, von Ribbentrop, Hitler and Stalin pact are examples of what you're talking about. The ones that you're talking about, perhaps, you know, yearning for are, one, the United States takes the military option off the table with Iran. 2, Hamas revises its charter. 3, the United States proposes reciprocal global nuclear arms reductions. 4, Israel accepts the Arab League peace plan. 5, China proposes multilateral negotiations and arbitration over the South China Seas. And, of course, there are others as well. But beginning with taking the nuclear option off the table, it does seem in many ways that we could drift into a war with Iran as we pull out of Iraq, the Green Zone and the consulate in Basra are very vulnerable if an Iranian militia is unleashed. We've seen displays of what appears to be irrational behavior on the part of the ruling elite with the sacking of the British embassy. The Saudis are quietly, and the Saudis and the Israelis are quietly urging the U.S. to strike Iran. So it could be, we talk about Merkel being in charge of Obama's fate in 2012. If something happens in Iran, the price of gasoline goes up to $10 a gallon, right?
Well, I'm not sure it goes that high, but it could have, at least for some period of time, some pretty sharp effects on the price of energy. I think the first point to note is that in some respects we're kind of already in a low-level undeclared war with Iran. A war may be too strong, but we are clearly engaged in various forms of covert action there, either the United States or Israel or both. We know that Iran shot down, or rather, we lost a reconnaissance drone. The Iranians claim to have shot it down last week, which again reveals that we've been sending reconnaissance drones over there to survey their nuclear facilities and perhaps some other things as well. There's clearly a lot going on between the two countries that's short of all-out warfare, and I don't think there's really anybody in the Obama administration who's serious about trying to go to sort of an all-out military action against Iran. The difficulty is when you have this kind of simmering low-level conflict, that sometimes things can start to spin out of control. Each side starts taking actions, thinking the other one is so resolved upon trying to change the status quo, and cooler heads do not prevail. The second problem, and this was what I was really alluding to in the post I wrote, well, as long as we're doing this, there's really no prospect of an improved U.S.-Iranian relationship. So what I was suggesting was, you know, people think outside the box for a minute, and instead of constantly repeating this mantra that all options are on the table, what might happen if the Obama administration said, look, we're not going to use force against Iran. It's not that much of a threat to our interests. We would obviously respond if Iran did anything, if it attacked a U.S. ally or anything like that. But we're not going to try and solve this problem by bombing the place. We're rather going to rely on diplomacy. This would be a position the United States has not taken for over a decade, and it might begin, not quickly, but over time, begin to open things up a little bit. What I was suggesting throughout this is that there are a number of places where if actors were willing to be bold and creative and imaginative, some diplomatic situations that are currently frozen might loosen up and we might actually see some genuine progress.
So again, I'm speaking with Dr. Stephen Walt, professor of international affairs at Harvard University, has an article in Foreign Policy Now, Five Potential Game Changers in International Diplomacy. Number two, of course, is the Hamas revising its charter, getting rid of this disgusting anti-Semitic nonsense, the protocols of the Elders of Zion being a part of the DNA of their ridiculous charter. That would of course change things. The U.S. is proposing a reciprocal global nuclear arms reduction. Now that's an interesting one. Give me a shorthand version of that.
Well, I think, you know, more and more people understand that the real risks out there are not the fact that the United States is going to be attacked by some country conventionally or with nuclear weapons, and that the real danger that nuclear weapons pose now is the possibility that, you know, some terrorist group might get a hold of a nuclear weapon or get a hold of nuclear material. One of the ways we reduce that danger is by significantly reducing the number of nuclear weapons in the world. And the question is, what can the United States do without going to, say, complete and total disarmament to encourage the other nuclear powers to reduce their arsenals along with us? So I was suggesting, you know, again, almost as a thought experiment, imagine the United States, which has thousands of nuclear weapons either on active service or in stockpiles, says, look, we'll reduce ours by the same percentage that everybody else does. So if all the other countries agree to reduce by 10%, we will too. And of course, that means we're removing far more weapons than others are because our arsenal is so much bigger. We could even say in advance that, look, we're not going to go to zero. We're going to keep a couple of hundred, which is all we really need to deter anyone, because just imagine the damage you could do with a couple of hundred nuclear weapons against any other country. So we could say, look, we're going to keep a minimum deterrent, but we're going to try to encourage everybody who has them to slowly reduce down, and we'll follow suit. And even if we couldn't get everyone to go along, this puts us, in a sense, on the side of the angels. It makes it clear that we're sort of reasonable on this front. The final point, of course, to make is that the United States is the world's strongest conventional military power. So a world in which nuclear weapons don't play as big a role and aren't seen as having enormous prestige is actually a world that's one more attuned to our overall interests as well. It'd be nice to see the United States take a bold position like this, although I have to admit I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, I would advise you not to hold your breath on number four, which is Israel accepting the Arab League peace plan, which the Saudis offered back in 2002. Interestingly enough, recently the former head of Mossad, Maya Dagan, castigated Israeli governments for not accepting the or not taking seriously the Arab League peace plan. What about China's multilateral negotiations and arbitration over the South China Sea?
Finally, lots of countries in Asia and Southeast Asia are worried about what China's rise means. And the dispute over a variety of little islands in the South China Sea and over who actually controls the seabed and the economic zones adjacent to the various countries there has been one of the flashpoints where a number of countries are very worried that China wants to basically turn the South China Sea into something of a Chinese lake. Now, several countries, including the Philippines, have proposed that this go to international arbitration, and China has basically rejected that view. Up until now, they say they want to do this all on the basis of bilateral negotiations with each of the separate countries. But it occurred to me that, you know, a really far-sighted Chinese leader would actually want to go the other way. Say, look, we would like to do a multilateral negotiation of all the interested parties, and if that doesn't work, we're perfectly happy to submit it to international arbitration. There's actually an existing international body, the International Tribunal on the Law of the Sea, and we, China, will abide by whatever decision they accept. It might end up with a somewhat less optimal distribution of sovereignty in the region from a Chinese point of view, but this would be a very powerful diplomatic signal to some of China's neighbors that they didn't have territorial ambitions, that their rising power was nothing to worry about, that American concerns about security in Asia were probably overblown. Again, I'd be somewhat surprised if China did this, but this is the kind of thing that if a country did it, it would be a real game changer. It would alter the way in which China's rise is being viewed by some of its neighbors.
Well, just in closing, one of the game changers that wasn't brought up is the idea of ending the Indo-Pakistani dispute over Kashmir, and of course there are broader issues about U.S.'s deteriorating relationship with Pakistan, which is clearly a big part of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, and it seems to such a vexed relationship. I'd say that would be the great Gordian knot, wouldn't it?
That's certainly one of them. The general point I would make is that there are lots of disputes and conflicts around the world that get hardened because, not just because there are significant interests involved, but because people, in a sense, become convinced that there's really nowhere to break out of them and that one simply has to wait for the passage of time. And I guess I place more value in human creativity and courage, that there occasionally statesmen can see outside what the normal constraints are and have the courage to make a bold initiative, as, say, Sadat did in saying he was willing to go to Jerusalem for peace, or as Nixon did when he made the opening to China. And that, therefore, we ought to be looking at some of those problems and asking ourselves, is there a way to cut through this that involves some imagination and some courage that might open things up to new solutions? And I was hoping the rest of my readers would propose some ideas of their own, and who knows, maybe one of them might actually get adopted and pursued.
And how would they do that?
I'm sorry?
How would they propose
it? Again, once ideas start getting talked about, right, things that previously appeared to be impossible suddenly become conceivable. You can start thinking about it. People can start debating it. If readers want to propose it, they just go to my blog and hit the comments thread, and they can throw their proposals onto it, and we'll see if we can get a conversation started.
Well, give us the blog.
It's walt.foreignpolicy.com.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Stephen Walt.
Pleasure talking with you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Walt, Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University. He's the author of The Origins of Alliances, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy, and The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. He has an article out now at Foreign Policy, 5 Potential Game Changers in International Diplomacy. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbons. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.